form.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Pastor Eli James here, along with Michael Swede. And this is Bloodline, simulcasting on Speak Free Radio and Eurofolk Radio. And today's subject is going to be how bankers have destroyed Africa. Bankers' colonialism is the subject for today. And let's see if I can put the link back. Yes, I'll put it right there. In the chat room here. Good morning, everybody. And today's subject is something that's almost never discussed, even in patriotic circles, even in Christian identity, the effect that the banking has on local and global economies and how it pauperizes everybody. And we all know, you know, you're constantly hearing about white colonialism in Africa and around the world, but they never talk about the bankers that financed the colonialism and how when the white colonialists left, in particular Africa, the Jewish bankers stayed and are still impoverishing the African countries. Good morning, Michael. How are you doing today?
Good morning, Eli. I'm doing very good here in a bit. Now it's snow here in Sweden, so it's white outside, white and a bit cold, you know, so, but it's nice. It's nice. Then we have time now to make some more shows and make Yahweh proud of us.
Yeah, amen, amen. Can you imagine what it'd be like if snow was black instead of white? We wouldn't be able to see anything, right?
That would be black as,
black as night. Right.
Yeah, it would be very, very boring, Mike.
Right. Yeah, it would be difficult to see, really. Right. So Yahweh made a good decision by making snow white, right, instead of black or some other. How about red? That would be awful too, wouldn't it? Okay.
Yeah, or just gray. Sometimes it would be so dark, everything. So it's lighten up everything.
Yes. So we need to have white light everywhere. Okay. So let's get into this story here. And I'll pick up on the it's called the Structural Adjustment. Global Issues is the website, www.globalissues.org. And the title of the article is Structural Adjustment, a Major Cause of Poverty. Now, I would have titled it this way, Bankers' Colonialism, a Major Cause of Poverty. And I can put it this way. I don't think this article talks about it because I scanned through it earlier today. And it doesn't talk about the fact that the corruption instituted by these bankers. For example, if the bankers make a huge loan to a corrupt African country, what typically happens is the black leader of that country will simply take the money loaned to his country for himself, build five or six villas and palaces, and then force the people of his country to work harder to pay back the loan, right? So it doesn't benefit his people whatsoever. Right?
Then I can understand that they're getting upset.
Oh, yeah, right. Yeah, and poorer.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, and poorer too. But to say something about if you take the African, if you take the Indian, they have some kind of, if you compare it to them, sorry now for using now some hard word, but the pathetic white race that does with the vaccines, when they came, our people waited in queues for it. But in India, they burned those places down instead and hunted them away. Same in Africa, they don't want it. So I at least read about India that they did it. They have some natural they have some for, they have some connection, that more connection to maybe Yahweh what we they are created by him, but still they abide some mind more to his law than we're doing.
Right.
Unfortunately.
Yeah. Popular ignorance of economics is just unbelievable. Well, first of all, it's not taught in the schools, okay? And the textbooks that are available on it really don't discuss this aspect of how – well, let me ask you a question. Has going into debt ever created prosperity for anybody?
No.
No.
No, right. Never. Maybe in a short time people think it is, but they will be taken away. That's how the EU operate. They give people something a short time, and then they take it back.
Yeah. Well, if you're lucky, you borrow money, invest it in a company or in a business, and if the business succeeds, then you have profit, and you can pay off your debt with the profit. But that it doesn't always work that way. In most cases, these businesses fail, and the people still have the debt and have no way to pay the money off, pay it off. Okay, that's really what's going on worldwide. And how about our national debt here in America? How many trillions is it? We lost count. How many trillions we owe? To whom? To whom are these debts owed, Michael?
Private banks called the Rothschild, House of Rothschild in the city of London.
Amen. And the local branch here in America is the Federal Reserve. And I'm sure you have a local branch in Sweden that another Rothschild bank.
Oh, yeah, we do. It's called Sverige, again, this deceptive word, Sveriges Riksbank or Sweden's central bank. They always say Sweden. No, it's not Swedish. It is Rothschild's central bank. And right, here the henchman here in Sweden is Wallenberg. He is the agent for Rothschild here.
Okay, yeah. And it works this way all over the world, folks, all over the world. Okay, so let me get
One point also. We know that we have maybe two, maybe three nations today that are not under the heel of the Rothschild, and that is, I guess, is Syria, it is Iran, right. And then I'm a bit about North Korea. They are communists, so they are run probably by Jews, but are their central bank under the Rothschild? I'm a bit... I don't know if they are, but still, you have maybe three nations or two nations are not under the Rothschild, and they're also always perpetrated as the big enemies.
Right, of the West, right?
and the world, of course.
Right. Oh, how about Gaddafi? Remember what happened to Gaddafi when he tried to institute a gold-backed currency and gave young married couples $20,000 to start their lives and tax breaks if they have children. Isn't that good?
It's
isn't
very good. But maybe someone get see this in the other nations. Well, we want this too, and it starts to spread. And Gaddafi, and he implemented some of his also of his actions, as you say. That was the same that Hitler did in Germany during the 30s and 40s. They did the same also. They got cut on the taxes and they got benefits for having many children.
Right. Well, Hitler got Germany out of debt, did he not?
He did. That was his only crime. That he took Germany out of the Rothschild central banking system. By then, it was the gold standard. That's why gold standard won't solve anything either, because all the gold, Rothschild had all the gold.
That's
so they manipulate that too. That's the problem.
But Gaddafi did have gold, and he was able to back his currency with gold, and the Rothschilds cannot allow that to happen.
No. And he also was like a buffer, so not all the African immigrants could come in here into Europe and molest our women and destroy our nation. Now it happened. It's free open. Before Gaddafi was a gate. He stopped that. Yeah. So he was an honorable man, I must say. He was loved by his people. What he did, he was so loved by his people.
Yeah. Okay, Brother Abear says, if you pay $31 extra a month, a dollar for every day of the month on mortgage, you'll kill the interest. Well, most people don't have that extra $31, right? They're living hand to mouth, as we say here, or paycheck to paycheck. and they're lucky if they can pay all their other bills besides the mortgage. Okay. So, but yeah, if you can manage to pay off the interest on your debt, but you know, the way they structure a mortgage is it's multiple interest. Okay. It's compound interest, that is prefigured when they make you the loan. So even though you only, let's say you need to borrow $10,000 to buy the house, with the compound interest, the loan becomes $30,000. Okay. So the loan is already got the interest payments figured into it, and your interest with compound interest is twice what the loan is worth. Okay. That's how the bankers do it. And this is how they keep us enslaved. Debt is slavery, folks. Debt is slavery, and it's worse than chattel slavery because, oh, okay. All right, so we got a problem on Telegram. Can only hear me and not Michael. All right, so I tell you what, Michael, go ahead and start reading from this article. I'll see if I can fix the problem on Telegram in the meantime. Go ahead.
Okay, so this is the article called "The Structural Adjustments, a Major Cause of Poverty" by Anup Shah. And start up with a quote. Debt is an efficient tool. It ensures access to other people's raw materials and infrastructure on the cheapest possible terms. Dozens of countries must compete for shrinking export markets and can export only a limited range of products because of northern protectionism and their lack of cash to invest in diversification. Market saturation ensures reducing exports income to a bare minimum, while the North enjoys huge savings. The IMF cannot seem to understand that investing in healthy, well-fed, literate population is the most intelligent economic choice a country can make. End of quote.
Okay. Right. The healthy, well-fed, literate population. Oh, you can't have that.
No, and that's what I was thinking. This go in. This doesn't match the bankers, and IMF is, of course, also the International Monetary Fund is also a branch of the Rothschild, I guess. Yeah.
Right. And so forget about protectionism. It doesn't mean anything. The bankers rule the roost, and whatever the and whatever the bankers decide for an economy, that is what the will happen. Doesn't matter what the government all of these side issues like protectionism. Well, actually, protectionism is good because America became the most powerful country on the face of the earth by protecting its indigenous industries. All right. That did not hurt the global economy because what happens is, well, eventually the other countries will latch on to our system of doing things, which is called the American system, which is free enterprise capitalism, not bankers capitalism, but free enterprise capitalism. That's the difference. Okay. So, please continue. And, again, let me just, I'm going to have to go on a real quick explanation here. The difference between free enterprise capitalism is when the government controls the currency and has, and spends that like gold and silver coins into circulation. Now people can write checks off the whatever bank account they have, whether they have gold and silver in their account doesn't matter. You can write checks. And so you don't have to carry a bag of gold or silver to pay your debtor, the person you owe money to, off. Okay. So, that doesn't create interest. That doesn't create debt. When the government controls or issues the currency, no debt is incurred. But when the bankers issue the money, the currency, that is when debt automatically occurs and accrues, not on behalf of the state, but on behalf of the bankers. This is basic economics 101, debt. how debt is created. And that's the difference between a private banking economy and a national economy that creates its own currency. And that's when our Constitution expressly states that the government should issue the currency, not private bankers. Okay? That's a major difference. Okay, back to you.
Yes. And also with when you have this kind of, you have now, because then the beauty with the system that you started up with in America is that a business practice that is not it's not working, it will collapse.
Yes.
And it dies out. But what do you do now when banks getting too big to fail? The government's going to do bail out on them. And
right.
Because their system doesn't work, because their business practice don't work. And then they get money from the government because their business practice is wrong. So that is also, but that is pure, that is communist to do like this, socialism.
Right, right. Okay. All right, please continue. I'm still working on getting your vocal onto Telegram.
Okay.
Okay,
good.
Go ahead.
So many developing nations are in debt and poverty, partly due to the policies of international institutions such as the International Monetary Fund, the IMF, and the World Bank.
Mm-hmm.
And that is just Jewish creation by the Rothschild.
Right.
Their programs have been heavily criticized for many years for resulting in poverty. In addition, for developing or third world countries, there has been an increased dependency on the richer nations. This is despite the IMF and World Bank's claim that they will reduce poverty. No, you create poverty by their action. This, like this, if you say, metaphor could be, you don't, if you want to learn someone to fish, you don't give him the fish. You give him the fishing rod so he can learn to fish. Same here. You don't give them like this because then they will get dependent and they can do nothing. They will,
right.
They don't develop anything.
Yes. Yeah. So, but of course, banking is designed to enslave people to that economic system so that you can never get free of it. And this is what people don't understand. It's intrinsically slavery. It's designed to enslave people to the bankers' money manipulation tactics. That's all it is. Okay. All right. Okay. Back to you.
Yeah. So following an ideology known as neoliberalism and spearheaded by these and other institutions known as the, quote, Washington Consensus, and no quote, bracket, for being based in Washington, D.C., and no bracket, structural adjustments policies, bracket, SAPs, and no bracket, have been imposed to ensure debt repayment and economic restructuring. But the way it has happened has required poor countries to reduce spending on things like health, education, and development, while debt repayment and other economic policies have been made the priority. In effect, the IMF and World Bank have demanded that poor nations lower the standards of living of their people.
Right. There you go. Yes. Okay. It's the inevitable consequence of doing business with bankers is that the standard of living of the people declines rapidly. Okay. It does not improve. You know, so what's the solution offered by the international bankers for poverty in any country? Well, they give them a big loan, right? And how has that worked in Africa, in South America, here in America? Has that worked anywhere?
No, it gives them no. They are even further into debt, and they're more even further close to the bottom of
right.
No return.
Right. Yes. Okay. There's this list of green bullet points. Let me skip those. I'll just go to. I'll read the next section here. A spiraling race to the bottom. At details further below, the IMF and World Bank provide financial assistance to countries seeking it. but apply a neoliberal economic ideology or agenda as a precondition to receiving the money. For example, well, neoliberal communist, I would say it's communist, right? You have to turn the people of that country into worker drones to produce more stuff, so waste their natural resources so that they can pay the debt. Okay? Here's their bullet points. They prescribe cutbacks, that is, quote-unquote, liberalization of the economy and resource extraction slash export-oriented open markets as part of their structural adjustment. In other words, free trade. But what is free trade really? Free trade, is, in fact, the it creates a middleman. That is the international bankers. It creates a middleman that all trade must go through. Okay, that's how the Jews get their cut from the exporting country to the importing country. It doesn't go directly from one country to the other. It goes, okay, it goes through the bankers right. Okay. So yeah, please continue because I'm still working on getting the telegram feed proper. Please continue there. Okay.
Now let's see.
Yeah, I just read the first bullet point.
Oh, you did. Okay. Now we're thinking. Okay, the role of the state is minimized. Privatization is encouraged as well as reduced protection of domestic industries. Other adjustments policies also include currency devaluation, increased interest rates, quote, flexibility, end of quote, of the labor market, and the eliminations of subsidies, such as food subsidies. To be attractive to foreign investor, various regulations and standards are reduced or removed. The impact of these preconditions on poorer countries can be devastating. Factors such as the following lead to further misery for the developing nations and keep them dependent on developed nations. Poor countries must export more in order to raise enough money to pay off their debt in a timely manner.
Yeah. Timely, right.
Because there are so many nations being asked or forced into the global marketplace before they are economically and socially stable and ready and told to concentrate a similar cash crops and commodities as other. The situation resembles a large-scale price war. Then the resources from the poor regions become even cheaper, which favors consumers in the West. Governments then need to increase export just to keep their currencies stable, bracket, which may not be sustainable either, end of bracket, and earn foreign exchange with which to help pay off debts. Governments therefore must spend less, reduce consumption, remove or decrease financial regulations, and so on. Over time, then, the value of labor decreases, capital flows become more volatile, a spiral race to the bottom then begins, which generates social unrest, which in turn leads to IMF riots and protesters around the world.
Right. Okay. So borrowing money from bankers leads to riots.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. Because yeah. Then they will be competing on paying off the interest, because you have created the money for the interest doesn't exist.
Yes. That's right. That's right. The debt is increased dramatically because you're borrowing money that must be created somehow, and that causes inflation. Once that money is created and spent into circulation by the bankers, that creates inflation. So you have this endless spiral of money creation, inflation, and debt, never ending until a crash happens, right? And then it starts all over again.
And as you say, also this is also something that people generally don't understand. This, as you said, this with that how inflation is created, because they don't really tell you how it is created. But it says, as you say, when you generate more money, when the banks generate more money and spend it in circulation, then you increase the inflation rates. And that's always the one, the first one that uses the money have that power. Then everybody else will be affected by the rising inflation rate. And it's always right. The bankers that have that power.
That's right. And that's almost like God. That's the kind of power the bankers have with debt money and money creation.
Oh, yeah, it is. Okay, let's continue. These nations are then told to peg their currencies to the dollar, but keeping the exchange rate stable is costly due to measures such as increased interest rates. Investors obviously concerned about their assets and interest can then pull out very easily if things get tough. In the worst cases, capital flight can lead to economic collapses, such as we saw in the Asian global financial crisis of 1997, 98, 99, or in Mexico, Brazil, and many other places. During and after a crisis, the mainstream media and free trade economists lay the blame on emerging markets and their governments' restrictive or inefficient policies, crony capitalism, etc., which is a cruel irony. When IMF donors keep the exchange rates in their favor, it often means that the poor nations remain poor and get even poorer. Even the 1997, 98, 99 global financial crisis can be partly blamed on structural adjustments and overly aggressive deregulations for emerging economies. Millions of children end up dying each year.
Mm-hmm.
And yes. Here we have a quote. Quote, competition between companies involved in manufacturing in developing countries is often ruthless. We are seeing what Corten described as, quote, a race to the bottom, which with each passing day, it becomes more difficult to obtain contracts from one of the mega retailers without hiring child labor, cheating workers on overtime pay, imposing merciless quotes and operating unsafe practices, end of quote.
Right. So all of the evils that are attributed to white colonialism are actually caused by Jewish banksterism.
Okay? Yep. Yes, that's a very good summarization.
Yes. All right, please continue.
And this quote was from John Medaille, Big Mistress, Poor People, The Impact on Transnational Corporations on the World Poor. So this is one of the backbone to today's so-called, quote, free, end of quote, trade. In this form, as a result, it is seen by some as unfair and one way or extra-trialist. If also serves to maintain unequal free trade, as pointed out by G.W. Smith. As a result, policies such as structural adjustment have, described by Smith, contribute to, quote, the greatest peacetime transfer of wealth from the periphery to the imperial center in history. End of quote, to which we could add without much media attention. Now, of course,
right.
Of course.
Oh, no, we can't have media attention. We can't have that. All right. Yeah. So, yeah. Okay. Bingo. This is the knowledge that everybody needs to have about the way the global economy is run. And you're not going to get it from your college textbooks. You're not going to get it from mainstream media. You're not going to get it from the famous economists that have all kinds of, you know, videos and lectures and seminars. You're not going to get it from them because they're all employees of the same system.
Yeah,
right.
And they don't want to ruin the system because then they have their probably big pay. So why ruin it? They don't want to ruin it.
There you go. No. They're wallowing in the debt accumulation. You know, they get paid by this debt accumulation, and then the world suffers. Yeah. Well, this is why we have periodic crashes. You have to have a crash every once in a while. And, of course, these are arranged so that the banksters themselves suffer the least. They suffer the least. Everybody else suffers tremendously during these crashes, right? But because the bankers have so much money in reserve, they can spend their way. Actually, what happened in America during the Great Depression was the bankers foreclosed on the American farmer and on the small local banks. They put the farmers out of business and by bankrupting them, and they put the small bankers, local bankers, out of business. So when the crash was over, the bankers simply spent money into circulation to create prosperity, okay, artificial prosperity. And they bought up those farms for pennies on the dollar, and they simply put those other banks out of business. And now the Federal Reserve System has taken over the economy completely. That was the true purpose of the crash of 29. It was not an accident, folks. It was deliberate. Back to you.
Yeah, and then they took all the farms from your people, and they were enslaved, and then they call it, I think they also wasn't then also they started with those personal ID to taking people's when, like in Sweden where you're born, you're getting this personnummer, personal number they put, and that is like their little stamp on you that you
Yeah, your birth certificate.
Yeah, exactly, that one. That's the word I was looking for.
Right, that's your personal number, right? Well, here we have a Social Security number as well. I'm sure just about every country in the world now has a similar type of system, like a Social Security number. Your personal number, right? Right? As opposed to your name, okay? And they invest in your birth certificate. Your birth certificate becomes a lien on your future earnings, okay? So the right to tax you, basically, is what they use the birth certificate for. All right, please continue.
Yes, so maintaining dependency and poverty. One of the many things that the powerful nations bracket through the IMF, World Bank, etc., and bracket prescribe is that the developing nations should open up to allow more imports in and exports more of their commodities. However, this is precisely what contributes to poverty and dependency.
Okay.
And here's a quote. If a society spends $100 to manufacture a product within its borders, the money that is used to pay for materials, labor, and other costs moves through the economy as each recipient spends it.
Right.
Due to this multiple effect, $100 worth of primary production can add several hundred dollars to the gross national product, bracket, GNP, and the bracket, of the country. If money is spent in another country, circulating of that money is within the exporting country. This is the reason an industrialized product exporting commodity importing country is wealthy, and undeveloped product importing commodity exporting country is poor.
Okay, well, that's just one of the reasons, okay? So, in other words, the wealthy countries, the so-called West, okay, are the first world, the industrialized first world, because we are able to go into third world countries, second, third, and fourth world countries, and pay very cheap labor rates and to child labor to dig up lithium, right, for lithium batteries for Elon Musk and other companies, right? Pay next to nothing for the child labor there. That they can import this material, which the importation fee is very minimal as well. And then once it arrives at the industrial facility to turn it into batteries, that's where the main cost comes in. But even there, they can do that in China. They can do that in Indonesia. They can do that in Africa as well by setting up factories there instead of having to import them into the West. So gradually, the industrialized West ceases to become a manufacturing concern and is simply moving products around, right? The whole industrial West now has become a middleman for all these cheap goods coming from the third world. So how long do you think this system, what's the likelihood of this system improving the lot of the third world?
No, that's history proven. They don't improve it. They make it worse for them. And they create dependency, and they are worse off than what they were before.
Yes, absolutely worse off, right? That's why we need periodic crashes, okay, for this whole system, okay? Periodic crashes are an absolute necessity. They have to start over, and then what do they do? They blame it on global warming, right? See, yeah. Global warming caused the collapse of the economy, right?
Yeah, okay. That's the only one to tax us even further and put people into those concentration camps, or call it 15-minute cities. That is just a nicer word to say concentration camp, because that's what that is.
That's right.
But it wouldn't sell so good if they call it concentration camp. So let's call it something nice, something people like. 15-minute city sounds good. Now we're talking about marketing, and who was the father of marketing? He was also a Jew. He was a cousin to Freud.
Right. And keeping the people drugged up. You know, so here, allopathic medicine, which is also controlled by the international Jew, here in America, it's totally controlled by the Rockefellers, that keeping people drugged up, misfed, for lack of a better term, with food that has no nutrition, you know, sugar, fat, and salt, right? sugar, salt, and fat is the staple American diet here, and there's no nutrition. They remove the nutritional value of the food, so you're constantly getting sick. So the sicker the population, the less able they are to think for themselves, the less time they have, and they have to scrounge around to make money to pay their debt, the less time they have to read for themselves and figure out what's wrong with the world. And then they offer the solution, namely Donald Trump and or Joe Biden, right? So everything is placed before our eyes. Their solution is placed before our eyes, but they're the ones creating the problems, and nobody can figure it out. Nobody can figure it out. Only those of us in Christian identity have a clue as to, you know, the Jewish nature of the problem and how it works and how the world has been enslaved by debt, money, by usury, folks. And this is usury by God's chosen people who are supposed to be obeying Yahweh's laws, right?
Yeah, but the Jews don't do it. Come on, this is just a cover screen for them.
Yes. Okay.
So let's continue then.
Yes.
Yeah, so developed countries grow rich by selling capital intensive, bracket, thus cheap, and bracket, products for a high price, and buying labor in intensive, bracket, thus expensive, and bracket, products for a low price. This imbalance of trade expands the gap between rich and poor. The wealthy sell products to be consumed, not tools to produce.
There you go.
This maintains the monopolized of the tools of production and assures continued market for the product. Racket. Such control of tools of production is a strategy of the mercantilist process that control often requires military might.
Oh, there you go. Mercantilist process. There's your colonialism, right? And, since the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund have such an easy time corrupting the leaders of these third world and fourth world countries, that there's really no impediment to this process. But there's really no impediment to this process in the first world either, because all you have to do is bribe a politician, bribe Congress to borrow more money, right? That's all you have to do is bribe the Congress critters to borrow more money from guess who, right?
The same people.
Yeah, you named the Jew. Guess who, all right? This process works so effortlessly, so seamlessly, and it's never discussed in any news outlet ever. I remember when I studied economics, like when I came back from Vietnam, you had to take a bunch of courses from different areas to get your degree. And so I had to take a couple of economics courses, and the main course, main textbook for the economics course was Paul Samuelson. Can you guess what tribe he's from? Paul Samuelson.
You wish.
Yep. Paul Samuelson, a 3-inch thick book called Economics. That was the title of the book. And in that book, there's only two paragraphs about the Federal Reserve. The rest is nothing but economic gobbledygook for people who think that this is not an explanation of the economy. It's simply economic theory promoted as fact, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And that's what you have in the colleges, folks. That's what you have in the colleges. It's garbage.
Yeah, and as I say, it's a theory, and a theory is not proven to be true. It's just a theory.
That's right. All right. Okay. Yeah, and every theory, even scientific theories, nuclear physics included, has always had to be adapted to new discoveries. No theory has ever stood the test of time. Okay. That's why you got to have truth instead of theories, right? You have to have truth instead of theories. But we'll never get truth because even, for example, CERN, the so-called God particle, there is no such thing. That's just a word, a concept they throw out to the public to make them think, that these scientists really are going to figure out what's going on and know how the universe works. No, they don't. They're not even close because Yahweh has prevented them from getting that information, right? It's called quantum mechanics. There's a limit to what humans can know about the universe. Okay, that's designed by Yahweh. So we can't destroy the whole universe. Maybe we can destroy planet Earth, but we can't destroy the whole universe, right? The Jews would love to, but they can't. Okay, so this is where we're at, folks. It's so bizarro. This might as well be an episode of The Twilight Zone, which it is. All right, please continue, Michael.
Yes, thank you. So, and this quote was from J.W. Smith, "The World's Wasted Wealth." And as seen above as well, one of the effects on structural adjustments is that developing countries must increase their export. Usually commodities and raw materials are exported. But as Smith noted above, poor countries lose out when they export commodities, bracket, which are cheaper than finished products, and bracket, are denied or effectively blocked from industrial capital and real technology transfer, and import finished products, bracket, which are more expensive due to the added labor to make the products from these commodities and other resources, and no bracket. This leads to less circulating of money in their own economy and a smaller multiplier effect. Yet, this is not new. Historically, this has been partial reason for dependent economies and poor nations. This was also the role enforced upon former countries under imperial and colonial rule. Those same third world countries find themselves in a similar situation. This can also be described as unequal trade.
Right? Well, okay, so the whole process, it's all promises. It's free trade. It's promises. But what it really means is that the Jews are free to exploit the West's economy and import stuff from poor countries at very low prices, get their cut as middlemen, and then export these to Western industrialized economies. All right. So instead, in fact, a perfect example of this happened about 10 years ago in the Philippines, where the free trade economy, which is a globalist, all that means is globalism, and the Jews are the globalists. They prevented farmers in the Philippines from selling their product locally to other Filipinos. They had to put it on the international market, which meant the Jews were now in control of the commodity, which they in turn sold back to the Filipino consumer for a much higher price than they would have paid if they bought it directly from Filipino farmers.
But yep.
That's how it works, folks. That's called free trade, folks. What did Brother Abraham talk about the pig Latin, the false glossa, false language, false definitions of things? All they have to do is redefine words, and they confuse us. They make us think that up is down, left is right, poor is rich.
Yes, and they make everything that is immoral, thing that is contrary to Yahweh and his laws, to be something good. So that, but that is Satan's way. He always wants to do it Satan's way.
That's right. Yeah, to make things which are good seem evil and make that which is evil seem good. And boy, have they succeeded at that. Okay. All right. Please continue.
Yes. Let's go back to the article.
Yeah. Okay.
So, quote, at first glance, it may seem that the growth in development of export goods such as coffee, cotton, sugar, and lumber would be beneficial to the exporting countries since it brings in revenue. In fact, it represents a type of exploitation called unequal exchange. A country that exports raw or unprocessed materials may gain currency for their sale, but they lose it if they import processed goods. The reason is that the processed goods that requires additional labor, are more costly. Thus, a country that exports lumber but does not have the capacity to process it must then re-import it in the form of finished lumber products at a cost that is greater than the price it received for the raw products. The country that processes that material gets the added revenue contributed by its labors. Okay. Bracket. Emphasis. Okay. And okay. This was from Richard Robbins, Global Problems and the Culture of Capitalism.
Yeah. Now, don't blame capitalism, because remember, there's two types of capitalism. There's finance capitalism, which is run by the Jews. That's a global form of capitalism in which the Jews issue the currency for trade. The true capitalism, that is free enterprise capitalism, cuts the bankers out. Okay? So what this quote fails to acknowledge also is the additional cost of goods due to borrowed money. So the processor, let's say it's in Europe, okay? Sweden. Sweden is a great processor of lumber, okay? Usually they get their own lumber, but let's say they import lumber from Africa and they process it, and the company that does the processing borrowed money from some Jew to set up the factory. Well, that increased cost goes to the consumer. Now you send this piece of lumber back to Africa, it costs 100 times more than if they had processed them themselves. Okay. Free enterprise would cut out the Jew banker. That's why the Jew bankers hate free enterprise. That's true capitalism, folks. And through GLASA, they have redefined capitalism to make people believe that the only form of capitalism is bankers' capitalism, finance capitalism. All right? So by redefining words and creating new words that make no sense, right? But that's their code language, their dog Latin. They simply fool people into thinking that there's no other system besides this. And in the third world, what do they know besides poverty? No matter how much money the country borrows, they never get out of the poverty trap. It actually gets worse the more money the country borrows. All right, back to you.
Yeah, because if they would then produce the lumber and then the money would run in their own nation, that would be,
That's right.
That would increase the GDP. But now they are exporting it. They're doing the lowest form. But when you making added value to it, you also add to your economy.
Yes, that's right. That's right. Yes. So there's no added value to exporting, you know, unprocessed goods, you know, like gold, silver, whatever, your lumber. You're just getting the lowest rock bottom price for that type of commodity. And that doesn't benefit the economy at all. Yeah. Okay. All right. Okay. Yeah.
Let's continue.
Please continue. Yeah.
So exporting commodities and resources is seen as favorable to help earn foreign exchange with which to pay off debts and keep currencies stable. However, partly due to the prices, to the price war scenario mentioned above, commodity prices have also dropped. Furthermore, reliance on just a few commodities make countries even more vulnerable to global market conditions and other political and economic influences. As Gemini News Service also reports, talking to the World Bank, more than 50 developing countries depend on three or fewer commodities for over half of their export earnings. 20 countries are dependent on commodities for over 90% of their total foreign exchange earnings, says the World Bank. End of quote.
Okay.
And Ken Laidlaw.
Yeah.
Market cure proposed for third world battered farmers.
Yep. Farmers are the most battered people always.
They
get the starvation wages is basically what they get. They're better off just growing food for themselves.
They are. And that's because the Jews hate farmers. If there are some other race, they hate them also. Palestinians, for sure, they hate them too because they're farmers and they're cursed. They cannot farm.
No. And you know, and white people have tried to go to Africa to teach blacks how to farm. And it just doesn't work. They don't have the incentive. They are not able to look into the future to see, oh, I have to plant these crops now so that I can in the fall so I can harvest them in the spring, right? No, the blacks just don't think that way. The blacks are conditioned to have instant gratification. You want food, you go out in the woods and you pick up some grubs, some turnips and some carrots. And if you're really hungry, you kill a lion. Right, and have some chopped lion meat for dinner, right? That's the way they think.
Yep.
Yeah, and there's nothing you can do for them. And this is why the West, the colonial experiment, whether it's white colonialism or bankers' colonialism, will never work. And this is why it's actually best to have white colonialism, because the white people can put these people to work where otherwise they wouldn't work. And their societies suffer, you know, because we're supposed to be a blessing to the whole world, right? By putting people to work. They get more money from working for white colonialists than they do from Jewish banker colonialists, without a doubt.
And Isn't this also something that those some African leaders and people have said, that it was better under white people than what
there
it has now?
There you go. Yeah, even what's that country north of South Africa? Their leader, Desmond Tutu, I think, he said, let's bring those white farmers back, right? Because our economy was better when we had whites in charge of the farming and other things as well. Okay? A tacit admission. that white people are better at exploiting is the correct word, or utilizing commodities, right? And typically, for example, in the Canadian North during colonial days here in America, even the biggest companies that were getting raccoon pelts for the Davy Crockett hats, right, and exporting pelts to Europe, they were actually very careful not to destroy all the raccoons. They were very careful to make sure that they kept a supply of raccoons for future markets, right? So whereas other people in other countries, let's say in Africa and India, they will kill all the rhinos and the elephants for the ivory, and then guess what? There's no more ivory.
Nothing left. I mean, that's the problem. They don't see, as you say, they don't see longer. They only want now the future. The instant, as you said, gratification is the problem.
That's the problem. And you can't drive that out of the black community. And that's also true in Asia and other countries where, in Asia, the saber-toothed tiger tusks, exterminating a species for their, for their body parts, essentially, and also for the certain parts of the animals are used as aphrodisiacs. So they kill a whole animal for a small body part and then throw the rest away. This is how the world economy works when it's not run by white people, folks.
Okay. Yeah, and that is described. It was described. It's shown now that and the man cannot rule over man. We see it now when Jews try to rule; they they are totalitarian. They want this despot king to rule this world.
Yeah. Now, in addition, from this, let me just read this paragraph again. More than 50% of Africa's export earnings is derived from a single commodity. Now, what happens when that commodity runs out?
Yeah, they have nothing.
Then they have nothing, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. The old saying, a tool, anyway, as opposed to just giving him the food, give him the tool to create the food, then you really help that person. But that doesn't work in Africa because the blacks don't want to farm. I mean, the white farmer in South Africa has fed the black people of South Africa for generations. What kind of gratitude have these blacks showed to white South African farmers?
None.
Absolutely none, folks. Okay. They must be ruled over. They cannot rule themselves. Back to you.
Thank you very much.
Yes.
Okay. And then, now, did you read this quote? No.
No.
So this is the quote then. No, the quote I did read. Almost 4 years after the above was written, Oxfam reveals that things have not changed for the better. More than 50% of African export earnings is derived from a single commodity. Various countries are dependent on two commodities for the vast majority of their export earnings. And there are a number of other countries in Africa heavily dependent on very few commodities.
Right.
In addition, as Celine Tan in the Third World Network explained.
Okay.
And this is then the quote. Should I read the quote and then should we have a break then by this by the top of the hour?
Sounds good. Yeah, yeah. Let's do that. And then we're also planning on taking calls after 30 minutes, before 30 minutes to the end of the show. But yeah, I'll go ahead and quote this passage and we'll take a break.
Yeah. So, quote, falling bracket commodity and bracket prices have meant that large increase in export volume by commodity producers have not translated into greater export revenues, leading to severely declining terms of trade for many commodity producing countries. When the purchasing power of a country's exports decline, a country is unable to purchase imported goods and service necessary for its sustenance, as well as generating income for the implementation of sustainable development programs.
Okay, what's a sustainable development? Isn't that the catchword of the UN?
Yeah, UN agenda. Right. Agenda 2030.
They should. It's really called sustainable usury.
Yeah, yeah.
Back to you.
Yeah. And this agenda 2030 is basically just making it look fun to build your concentration camp.
Right. It's fun to charge interest and pauperize people. Yeah.
No, it's not. Right. Yeah, yeah. A vast majority of developing countries depend on commodities as a main source of revenue. Primary commodities account for about half of the export revenues of developing countries, and many developing countries continue to rely heavily on one or two primary commodities for the bulk of their export earnings. And this was Celine Chan. Tracking the commodity price crisis should be a WSD priority. Okay, should we have a little...
Yeah, okay, so I just want to say this article is from 2002, and it's not getting any better, folks. It can't possibly get better because you can see how the process works. Anytime a country borrows money to export commodities without creating any kind of infrastructure for manufacturing, that country is going to go broke again, right? But they'll still be in debt to the banksters. They'll never get out of the debt spiral. This is why the international Jew must stage and plan global crashes so that they can cut their losses where they need to, but still make as much money. Because every time the Jew plans a crash, they always profit on both ends. They profit from the fact that they have all this money in the first place, and then they profit from whatever... the investors invested, they retain that, but the investor loses it. Okay? That's how these crashes work. They are manipulated. They are caused by the international Jew. And there's also other things involved. Like, for example, as we talked about in the American crash in 1929, they foreclosed on the American farmer and shut down the competing banks to the Federal Reserve System. There's always more than one objective every time they crash the economy. Okay, folks, so I hope you're learning true economics here, because you're not going to get this from any other source than Eurofolk Radio, folks. Nobody else will do this. Okay, so here we go. We're going to play this song, and we'll be back in about 4 minutes.
Messiah.
he'd better come back soon, because I'm getting tired of waiting, folks. I'm getting really tired of waiting. So, hold on. Okay. Let the music do the talking. All right. So, welcome back, everybody. And I just want to let everybody know, first of all, that you're listening to Speak Free Radio. And there's a new addition to the Money Tree Publishing catalog of books. And, of course, we've been promoting, of course, The Great Impersonation by yours truly, How the Antichrist Had Deceived the World. And the new book here is The 6 Million, Fact or Fiction. 6 Million, Fact or Fiction. We have Europa, The Last Battle, In Black and White, the book written by a black man accusing the Jews, right? And also a CD set, The Myth of German Villainy, Adolf Hitler's Mein Kampf, Henry Ford's The International Jew, another book by a black man, Jews Are the Problem, etc., exposing the lies of history. So all these books are available at moneytreepublishing.com. And you're not going to get this kind of information anywhere else except right here at Eurofolk Radio and at Speak Free Radio. And Money Tree Publishing is the sponsoring organization for Speak Free Radio. So, folks, this is where truth lives. This is where truth lives. All right, so let's get back to our story here. And let me, where did we leave off here? Okay, tackling the commodity price crisis. Is that where we left off?
Yeah, that's okay. where we left off.
Okay, so let me do a couple of paragraphs here, and I'll turn it back over to you, and then we'll open the lines for callers. And so here, all you have to do is go to Speak Free Radio, click on the Eurofolk Radio or Bloodlines link. And if you click on that Bloodlines link, then you should be let into our StreamYard chat room, okay, where you can actually talk to us, talk to me and Michael. So it says here, Tan, that says Celine Tan, also highlights in the above article that, quote, a fall in commodity prices have also led to a buildup of unsustainable debt, right? So much for the sustainable development. The lack of greater revenues from exports has knock-on effects, as described further above. The irony is that structural adjustments were prescribed by the IMF and the World Bank due to a debt repayment concerns in the first place. Well, the problem is when the IMF and World Bank lent money to countries, they're guaranteed to fail. All right? It's guaranteed to fail, and the bankers know this. As debt relief and trade became major topics of discussion during the G8 summit of 2005, Yahya Orugedu, an economist from Benin, a small African country, also noted that exporting raw materials and agricultural products would not help fight poverty, right? Okay, they need to have that food right there in their own country, and these raw materials right there in their own country. Those raw materials have to be processed in the same poor country to help create a multiplier effect, which is exactly what we stated earlier, Michael. Make sense?
Yeah. Yeah, but this is just, this spiral just goes down. And then, of course, in this international market that is run by Jews and they're the middleman, they're also pressing down the prices. So they have to export even more to keep up.
Yes. All right. So let me continue here. Structural adjustment is the article we're reading from. And this, let's see, blah, 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 blah. Multiplier. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So this is from the article main body here. This concern also applies to larger economies. The global financial crisis that started in 2008 resulted in Brazil's exports to U.S. falling by some 42%, while it increased with China by 23%. Okay, do you think maybe that was planned? Don't you think the Rothschilds want to boost China's economy as opposed to Argentina and Brazil?
Of course. they have done, because yes. Now they are our enemies and we are helping our enemy. They are communist and they are, and you see, they are always the one doing the production. They have this added right. value on, in their economy, but I don't know how the China economy is doing at the moment, but yeah, they have been boosting that one up, their army and everything, because yeah, they're communists. They're run by them.
Right.
So, and mom.
Yeah, it's not doing very well, actually, but it's still the second largest economy in the world. And unfortunately, much of our military materiel is made in China as opposed to here in America. So if there, we ever do have a war with China, which is what the Rothschilds have planned, right, as a last resort, they will get the Chinese military to invade America and other countries in Europe, okay? So that's why they have to boost the Chinese economy. It's much, much easier to control one economy like China than to control all economies all over the world for military purposes, right? So that's the reason why they want to boost China's economy as opposed to Brazil and Argentina. So the author continues, however, almost 75% of Brazil's export to the U.S. were industrial products, whereas the opposite, about 25%, was for China. Vice President of the Brazil Foreign Trade Exchange Association explained why this is a concern to IPS. Quote, when dealing in commodities, quote, the importer decides and controls the quantity and prices, making an unstable market, right? The importer controls the prices and quantities. Okay? So you can only export so much as a basic raw goods economy. You can only export so much, and you can't dictate how much you're going to get for it. The global supply and demand, there is still supply and demand, even in a controlled economy. In contrast to the situation with manufactured goods. Now, manufactured goods like automobiles, even though there's a decline in the economy, they can't sell automobiles at below cost. They have to make a profit on those automobiles, otherwise the economy goes bust, and and the manufacturer goes bust. The global Jew cannot allow that to happen for any length of time, otherwise the global economy itself goes bust. So they have to be able to maintain profits from manufactured goods. Next, commodities also generate low-grade jobs, whereas manufacturing employs skilled personnel for higher wages, creates a multiplier effect on employment as the production chain is longer and expands the domestic market. So in every single case, an economy that produces industrial goods and processes raw materials into whatever is going to have a greater health as an economy than simply a raw material economy. That's why Africa will never get out of the debt spiral that it's in. Okay. And that's why any nation that relies on loans from international banksters will fall into this debt spiral as well. There's no way out of this, folks. There's no way out of this. These concerns are not new. Political economist Adam Smith also provided some insights in his 1776 classic, The Wealth of Nations, which is regarded as the Bible of capitalism. He was highly critical of the mercantilist practices of the wealthy nations, while he recognized the value of local industry and the impact of imported manufactured products on local industry. Okay, do you want to quote this from Adam Smith? You know, by the way, his book, The Wealth of Nations, is serially despised by all leftists. Okay?
It is.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. All right. Go ahead.
Okay. Thank you. So, through the encouragement of exportation and the discouragement of importation are the two great engines by which the mercantile system proposes to enrich every country. Yet, with regard to some particular commodities, it seems to follow an opposite plan, to discourage exportation and to encourage importation. It is its ultimate object, however, its pretense is always the same, to enrich the country by the advantageous balance of trade And why do you want to encourage importation? Because then the middleman gets a bigger cut.
That's right. he still doesn't talk about the middleman Jew. You know, he probably hadn't figured that out yet. It's 1776, after all. Okay, back to you.
It discourages the exportation of the materials of manufacture and of the instruments of trade in order to give our own workmen advantage and to enable them to undersell those of other nations in all foreign markets. And by restraining in this manner the exportation of a few commodities of no great price, it proposes to occasion a great, much greater and more valuable exportation of other. Well, when I read it, it sounds like it could be today. It's exactly what it is today.
That's right.
Nothing has really changed.
It's called free trade. He's actually describing free trade as it exists today, without including the middleman Jew in the equation, right?
Yeah.
All right. Okay.
And it encourages the importation of the materials of manufacture in order that our own people may be enabled to work them up more cheaply and thereby prevent a greater and more valuable importation of the manufactured commodities.
Okay.
And that was from Adam Smith, Wealth of Nations.
Right. Okay, so I would add that the sheer fact that this does not, when an industrialized economy imports goods from the third world, this does not impoverish the third world. What impoverishes the third world is usury, debt. That's what impoverishes the third world. Ultimately, the materials, for using the American system as a great example, the American system did not impoverish Europe. Okay, we had protectionism. It protected our people. It protected their incomes. It protected their living standard and encouraged trade within America. Yet at the same time, European goods were still being exported to America because Americans were now able to afford European goods, right? So it doesn't impoverish other economies. They just have to adjust their economy to the free market. Free market, not free trade. There's a huge difference between the two. Ultimately, as, let's say, African countries and Chinese countries that aren't totally controlled economies, they will import like manufacturing processes from America, which is what exactly happened. Shipbuilding, they can do their own shipbuilding. They can make their own widgets if they need widgets locally. There's nothing to stop them from doing that. Okay, but if they're constantly in debt to the banksters, they don't have money for investment. You see? They don't have money for investment if they're constantly in debt. And this is the Jewish system of economics, folks. So let me pick it up here. And reading the above, we can say that structural adjustment of policies are also mercantilists. In other words, it's the mercantilists, the people who move goods around. We are constantly told that we live in a world of global capitalism. And yet we see that while free markets are preached in Adam Smith's name, mercantilism is still practiced. What? Mercantilism is free trade, folks, where they manipulate markets and the middlemen are the ones who profit in both directions, right? They, first of all, like for example, in America, they destroyed our steel industry by importing Japanese steel, which was assisted by government support. The Japanese steel industry was subsidized by the Japanese government. Therefore, they were able to produce steel more cheaply than American steel producers. But this is manipulating the market, folks. That's market manipulation. It's not free market. It's government-assisted market, which destroys free enterprise. All right, that's one example. Another example is the exportation of the brain drain from California. What was that area of California where all of the computer stuff was being produced? Okay, and then exporting that to India. for much cheaper labor costs. Okay, so they can export jobs, they can export whole industries to the third world if they want to, and impoverish the people who invented the processes in the first place, right? That's what's been happening to America for now over 70 years, because this process began in the 60s and 70s, and there's no change in sight because the Jews control this process of job exportation. Another example is manufacturing facilities were picked up and moved wholesale to Mexico. So putting Americans out of work and then hiring Mexicans at maybe one-tenth of the rate they had to pay American workers, the people who developed the industry. All right, this is total exploitation, folks. Total exploitation. This is why we need protectionism. If we had had protectionism in place, the Jews would not have been able to export whole industries away from America and place them into third world countries. Okay.
And I would say the same happening in other industries now as well. This is done now as well with the, if we look at the, what I say, more the engineering and architectural works to, for example, producing, drawings, producing and doing the design work that is also now exported to abroad, to making India and Poland, and making India doing a lot of this work. So this is done on other markets as well. It's just goes on and on and on. So this, and it's the same modus operandi as you're telling. It's the same one now as it was then. So it's just, they just keep on other industries now.
Yes. Okay. So we're getting close to about 30 minutes left. And if you go to Speak Free Radio and scroll down to the live simulcast image, which is Bloodlines, which has the Tree of Life on it, and you click on that image, that should take you right into our Speak Free Radio chat room here on StreamYard. It should take you right to the StreamYard show that we're doing right now. All right, so please continue, Michael, and I'll just keep watching to see if anybody joins us on StreamYard.
No, I a bit missed. Where did you stop? Did you, you read the whole one after Adam Smith? So you have this little video, and then after the video.
Right. Okay. I think it was mercantilism is still practiced right underneath the Adam Smith quotation. So, and so the second paragraph after Adam Smith.
Uh-huh. Okay, there. Okay.
All right.
Okay. Of course, today it is a bit more complicated too. We do have, for example, products being exported from the poor countries, bracket, albeit some facing high barriers in the rich nations, and the bracket. But exporting rather than first creating and developing local industry and economy means the, quote, developing, and unquote, country losses out in the long run.
It doesn't get developed, right? Mm-hmm. So that's another fraudulent term. You know, calling these third world economies developing countries when all you're doing is exploiting their natural resources and not developing any industry. Again, there's another fraudulent term.
Yes, it is. And you're only exploiting them. You're only and exploiting their lower wages so you can make a cut between it.
Yeah, so see, you can see the devious language the Jews employ for everything they do. Always make something that's evil look good.
Oh, yeah.
They're experts at this. Okay.
Yeah, that's they're good at. Most give them that.
Yeah, right. Pig Latin. I forget the term, the actual term for it. Dog Latin. That's what it is. Dog Latin, where they create false terminology to make evil look good. Right? Mm-hmm. Dog Latin. All right, back to you.
So, hardly developing, because there is little multiplier effect of money circulating within the country, as mentioned above. Furthermore, with labor being paid less than their far wages in the poorer nations, wealth is still accumulated by and concentrated in the richer nations.
Right, or by the importers and exporters who and the middlemen who are the Jews. Okay, this is where the real money is. It's the middlemen. The middlemen, because often these middlemen also control the manufacturing facilities and the shipping facilities, etc. You know, the Jews control shipping all over the world. And railroads, the Rothschilds got rich building the railroads in Europe. The Rockefellers got rich here in America building the railroads and then exploiting the oil, right? So typically, all of these industries are either owned and run by Jews or they finance these industries and therefore profit from them, either directly or indirectly, all right? So again, the central banks and their negative effect on the world economy is never discussed anywhere on any media. For most people listening to this show today, they probably never heard how this system actually works. Okay? So that's why we're here, is to explain these things. And obviously, among the Judeo-Christian ministry, I don't think there's a single one that has has studied an economics course. And if they have, they would get the Jewish version of economics, not the biblical version of economics, right? So the churches are pretty much useless in exposing this evil. Okay. All right, please continue.
And there's, just want to point out, there is another fallacy of the church today. They are not the watchmen at the wall. They don't educate their flock with truth. They don't. They just do the work for the Jew because the Jew pay them to do those sermons. They use, probably the sermon is made by Jews, so they preach the Jewish-made sermons.
Yes, that's right.
And so okay. They would never tell those stuff. And maybe this, if they would speak about this is interesting. Maybe that would get some more people into the pews, you know.
Yeah, right.
Because now it's interesting. Now you can apply it.
No, it can't be interesting. It's got to be dull and boring. That's how you drive people away from the churches.
Yeah, of course. Right? That's what you want to.
Yeah, and make them pure consumers, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Only
okay.
Consumers. And be like, live like the devil during the day, during the weeks.
Right. All right.
Okay. So, yes. The luckiest nut in the world is an 8-minute video. Sorry, no transcript available, as far as I know. Produced by Emily James. It's a cartoon animation explaining the effects of loans, structural adjustment, and cash crops, and their impact on poor countries. It traces how Snegel was encouraged to grow nuts for export. In summary, as a poor nation without many resources, it took out loans to help developing the industry. Other nations saw this was going well, so they followed suit. The price of the nut started to drop, and Snegel faced debt repayment problems.
Senegal. Okay, so it's kind of reminds me of the Dutch tulip hyperinflation, right? So for some reason, the Dutch were getting high prices for tulips, okay? And the tulips became such a commodity that they were actually exchanged as money, you know, because the tulips were drawing so much in exchange. Well, then other countries started growing tulips, and all of a sudden the tulips became almost worthless, right? And so this is how, quote-unquote, developing the same commodity in multiple countries actually will depress the market. Okay?
Yeah.
Just let nature do its thing. Let the people who know how to grow nuts, grow the nuts, pick their own nuts, put them in boxes, and ship them off to whoever wants to buy them. Okay? Local products for local prices, exported by the local people. That's how the economy should work, folks. No middleman.
No middleman. That's the problem.
The middleman is the problem, the Jew middleman. All right, please continue.
So, structural adjustments policies were put in place, cutting spending and reducing government involvement in the nut industry and elsewhere. However, things got worse. At the same time, rich countries such as the U.S. were subsidizing their own nut and other industries, allowing them to gain in market share around the world. Rich countries have tools such as trade tariffs and the threat of sanctions at their disposal to help their industries if needed.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, America has not done that since the Jews have taken over our economy. But this shows how, you know, trying to invest in the third world economy in terms of developing them has never worked and will never work because as long as you have debt money attached to any commodity, that will eventually cause that country to go bankrupt. Okay? Because it's not sustainable. Even though the Jews like to use that word sustainable, it's not sustainable. All right, back to you.
Yes, thank you. So, thus, we are in the situations where the rich promote a system of free trade for everyone else to follow, while mercantilism is often practiced for themselves. Oh,
right.
Hypocrisy.
Yep.
Quote, yeah. Free trade, end of quote, is promoted by the rich and influential as the means for all nations to achieve prosperity and development.
Yeah, that's the propaganda, right? That's all it is. It's propaganda.
The wealth accumulations by the rich accountants is the past is attributed to this policy to strengthen this idea.
Yeah, well, no, the wealth of nations is not achieved by free trade. The wealth of a nation is achieved by protectionism. It's the international traders and their free trade policy, which creates wealth for them, but not for the nations, okay? Because the nations, typically their products and their raw materials are exploited by free trade, okay? This is, again, I can't say this often enough. America became the richest country on the face of the earth through protectionism, not through free trade. Back to you, Michael.
Yes, and that would also be a big hinder for the Jews if you had this protectionism. Because
right.
Then you can just protect your inner market. Then you couldn't do exporting like they did with your steel industry. They couldn't export our big industries like our car industries has been now
right.
driven away. And our now the heavy industry is being driven away to China. They couldn't have done that because then if the government were of good, they could protect their own. But they don't. They want to get rid of us.
Yeah. Free trade is just another one of those false slogans that is not the same as free enterprise, folks. Don't believe for one second that free trade means free enterprise. Okay. Free enterprise is when the government issues the currency and the bankers earn nothing from the currency. That and the free trade is when the bankers control everything. Back to you.
Yeah. The wealth accumulated by the rich accountants in the past is attributed to this policy to strengthen this idea.
Yeah, but that's a lie. Free trade has never created wealth for any country. Back to you.
That such immense wealth was accumulated not so much from free trade, but from the violent and age-old mercantile or, quote, monopoly capitalism, end of quote,
is ignored, right. So, again, people don't know actual history and they don't know economics to understand what's really good. Now, I have to tell you, when I was a young man in the late 60s, early 70s, I already understood this, right? And that free trade was a bogus idea because it totally conflicts with free trade capitalism, all right? And it's manipulated economy by the globalists. I was not fooled by the language. And yet, but if you go to college, you will learn the exact opposite, that free trade is good. Okay?
Yeah, because right. The college is run by Jews, and they want to promote the Jewish ideas of free trade.
Right. Yeah. And my mother idolized Richard Nixon. And when Richard Nixon went to China to open up, quote-unquote, free trade with China, right, I told my mother, what Nixon is doing here is evil. He is actually kowtowing to the Jews because this is not going to benefit America. It's only going to benefit the middlemen and China. Okay? And that's the way it's worked out, folks. All right, back to you.
Yeah. Such systems are being practiced again today. And even though they are claimed to be Adam Smith-style free trade,
they're not.
They are the very system that Adam Smith himself criticized and attacked.
There you go. Yeah, everybody quotes Adam Smith, right? Pretending that free trade is free markets. No, it's not.
No, it's not. It's
free enterprise. Yeah. Okay.
In 1991, Larry Summers, then chief economist for the World Bank, Brackett, and U.S. Treasury Secretary in the Clinton administration under George Bush and the Republic Party came into power, end of Brackett, had been strong backer of structural adjustment policies, he wrote in an internal memo. Quote, just between you and me, shouldn't the World Bank be encouraging more migration of dirty industries to the LDCs, bracket, less developed countries, and the bracket? The economic logic behind dumping a load of toxic waste in the lowest wage country is impeasible.
Impeccable. I think he's being facetious here. Because the economic logic behind dumping a load of toxic waste in the lowest wage country is impeccable. Well, yeah, that we can get rid of our toxic sludge by shipping it to third world countries and having them turn it into something useful, right? He's actually being facetious here, we should face up to that. But actually, his first sentence is accurate. Just between you and me, shouldn't the World Bank be encouraging more migration of dirty industries to the less developed countries? Well, if you mean by dirty, you know, like farming mining, that sort of stuff. Yeah, because you know, the third world could use that kind of stuff, but they don't have the capacity to develop it. All right, please continue.
And we should face up to that. Underpopulated countries in Africa are vastly underpolluted. Their air quality is probably vastly inefficiently low compared to Los Angeles or Mexico City. The concern over an agent that causes a 1 in a million change in the odds of prostate cancer is obviously going to be much higher in a country where people survive to get prostate cancer than in a country where under 5 mortality is 200 per 1,000.
Okay, so I guess the children in third world countries that die under the age of 5 is 200 per 1,000. That's what? That's 1%? 2%? Something like that? It's very high. Okay, so let me quote this article. Lawrence Summers, let them eat pollution. The Economist, February 8, 1992. Yeah, he's being facetious here, but you know, it's actually stating economic facts. That, why don't we export our toxic sludge to the third world and let them deal with the pollution, right? Okay. So when looked at in this light, poverty is more than simple economic issues. It is also an ideological construct, and it's deliberately caused by the banksters. All right, back to you, Michael. Eat, earn more, eat less. That's kind of what happens here in America.
Yeah. So, yeah. Quote, half a world away, bracket, from Zambia, and bracket, in Washington, the architects of this human disaster dine in comfort and seclusion. Spending more on one meal than Masuo's Peter's wife makes in a year of selling buns in their shanty town. Although most World Bank staff works in its Washington headquarters, those unlucky enough to be posted in the third world receive ample compensation for their misfortunes.
Just to be employed in a third world country for the World Bank is a misfortune. That's how poor these countries really are, and they're not getting any richer.
Yeah. This includes subsidizing housing, bracket, complete with free furnishing, end of bracket, an extended, quote, assignment grant, end of quote, of $25,000 and a, quote, mobility premium, end of quote, to defray the cost of child education. Salaries are tax-free and averaged $86,000 in 1995, according to a General Accounting Office report to Congress. No, quote, structural adjustment, end of quote, then for this privilege co-author of bankers and policy analysts. Meanwhile, in Africa, hidden genocide lays waste the continent.
Yep.
it is not right for a bank to run the whole world.
It isn't? It isn't?
And that says Fred M. Member, editor of the Zambia Post, quote, they do not represent anybody other than the countries that control them.
Well, no, the countries don't control the banks. It's the other way around.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. What this means in practice is that the United States runs out of countries, end of quote. He continues, quote, look at any African country today and you will find that the figures are swinging down, education standards are going down, health standards going down, and infrastructure is literally breaking up, end of quote.
Because they're exporting all the commodities that are required for those things. Right? Yeah. But he misunderstands. He thinks the America is the problem. No, it's the bankers that are the problem. Because we have the same problem. He just doesn't realize it. Okay? Yeah. And the next paragraph is very telling. Please continue.
In some countries, more is spent on debt servicing than education. For example, even in the former communist countries that are trying to undergo rapid economic, quote, reform, end of quote. Education is given a backseat. In fact, the UK-based development and relief organization, Oxfam, goes as far as saying that the IMF policies deny children an education.
There you go.
Since the end of the Cold War, even wealthy nations have seen government rollback on further functions in a similar style to structural adjustments. John McMurthy captures this well, being very critical on the impact of such adjustments on, quote, life requirements, end of quote. Quote, such systematic overriding of life requirements is now clearly evident from the most undeveloped to the most advanced societies of the world. In the case of Canada, again, infant mortality rates, the
quintessential
indicator of social health, rose an astonishing 43% in the 1995 Statistics Canada figures. The first record rise in over 31 years, while child poverty had increased by 46% since 1989. In Africa, an estimated 500,000 more children died from the imposed restructuring of their countries. Economists to ensure increased flows of money to external banks, while spending on health care declining by 50% and on education by 25% since these structural adjustment programs began.
No, it's caused by white colonialism. It's caused by white privilege. Right?
Yeah, but it's hard to say that now. When we are gone, we're not there. And when we are gone, they want us to come back, and they have instead Jewish slavery. Congratulations, that's what you got.
Every liberal needs to read this article to get some economic sense drubbed into their heads. All right, please continue.
This was from John McCarthy, Unequal Freedoms, the Global Markets and its Ethical System.
It's unethical.
Unethical, yes.
It should be, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
And as the crisis of AIDS gets worse in Africa, measures that reduces health budgets in all of the poor countries contribute to the problems. Bracket. See this site section on AIDS in Africa for more on that issue. And bracket. What is the IMF World Bank prescription? Quote.
Well, here, before you go there, what about COVID? This phony outbreak, hadn't that affected the world economy adversely as well? Tell me about it, Michael.
Yeah.
Suicide. Now, that's white privilege. White suicide has increased as a result.
Because I also think now when this, as you say, COVID, what that did, I guess that just it put some brakes on the economy because their economy was going into a hyperinflation, so they want to cool it down. I guess that was one of the reasons with COVID. They wanted to cool off the economy because it was That's my a bit my how I view it, that their economy was going very, very into an inflationary modes, and when people are dying, that is very deflationary activities. Their economic activity stops.
Okay.
So that creates a lot of deflation.
All right. Well, deflation, all that means is that the price of commodities falls. Okay. In spite of monetary, you can, if you can't get anything for your raw materials, let's say, that will, your commodity prices will fall in spite of inflation. Okay. And so it all depends on what the bankers do with the money. They create money, spend it into circulation. That's called inflation, folks. There's no other cause of inflation except that bankers cause inflation by spending too much money into circulation. You know, that's been a Milton Friedman. Milton Friedman, even though he's Jewish, he stated that very clearly, that it's the bankers who cause inflation by putting too much money into circulation.
Yeah, right. And people, they, when they hear that, I don't know if they hear it, they, I guess they don't understand it. I don't know why they don't react.
Yeah, yeah, it goes over their heads. It goes under their feet. It goes in one ear and out the other, right? Their brains don't process that information.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I mean, that's unfortunately how it is. And people are, they don't care really, because why? Yeah. It doesn't affect them. They think they have a good life, you know.
Yeah.
They have everything they need. Why would I care, you know? I have no problems. So, but that I think is the only way, that's one of the way that Yahweh can wake his people up.
Yeah.
Stomp on their wallets hard, really hard.
There you go. Stomp on their wallet or pick their pockets, which is actually what inflation does. It picks everybody's pocket by devaluing the currency in your wallet. Now, if you point out to, you know, Judeo-Christians and others that these banksters that are causing all this havoc are Jews, then they call you an anti-Semite.
Yeah, they don't want to listen. Oh, I only hear Jews now. I only hear Jews. Yeah.
Okay.
Do some research and you will find out. When you dig and you find every evil upon earth, you will find a Jew behind it.
Yeah, that's right.
But they hide this behind frontmen. They have this Gentile as they use frontmen. So you don't see the Jew behind the politics.
Right.
And in the banks, some banks, of course, don't have, some of them are Jews outright.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
this Goldman Sachs CEO, he is Jewish. But otherwise, they hide behind it. So you don't realize it.
Yeah. And they pretend to be Saxons, right? Goldman Sachs, right? The Anglo, what are the Anglo, what do you call it? The Anglo-British corporation that ruled South Africa. It's run by Jews. There's nothing Anglo and there's nothing British about it. It was a Jewish corporation. But by calling it that, the people look at that, oh, that's white colonialism.
Now again, Jewish deception.
Yes. That's what the beast that deceiveth the whole world, Judaism. Back to you, Michael.
Yeah, and this is all something of those came before us to say that our reading this book, Satan, Prince of This World, by William Guy Carr, and he seems to not think it is a Jewish conspiracy. I don't know why he doesn't see that the Jews were behind this conspiracy. So he a bit hides for them and say, oh, it's only the Illuminati, but there are all Jews.
Right, they're all Jews. Right, yeah. Maybe he got flack, you know, for publishing the book and had to take the Jews out of it, right, in order to get it published. But at least he's getting really close, right? Well, the same thing is true of the so-called incredibly evil Khazarian mafia. So many people have heard that expression, but when you tell them, well, these Khazars are actually Jews, then you're an anti-Semite, right?
they don't want to hear anymore. They don't want to see you. They run away. They find the door fast.
Yeah,
now you say too much.
Yeah, right.
Okay. Don't wake me up, you know. And they have songs that say that. Don't wake me up. I don't know the song, but I hear songs that are like that. Don't wake me up. Now, okay. I know why I don't want to be wake up. Okay, let's continue. So, a quote. The IMF has prescribed the same medicine for troubled third world economies for over two decades. Monetary
authenticity. This is 1999. This is 1999. It hasn't gotten any better, folks. It's gotten worse.
It has been worse. So monetary ostensicity. Tighten up the money supply to increase internal interest rates to whatever heights needed to stabilize the value of the local currency.
Okay, now stabilizing the value of the currency means there's going to be less of it. Right?
Yeah.
So they suck you in with inflationary spending, right? And then once you're hooked on their debt policies, then they remove the currency from the economy. That gets you, means you can't pay back the debt. See how it works? Yeah. That they call that monetary austerity, right? They stimulate the economy with inflation and sometimes hyperinflation. And then after they get the economy going and the people have used up all of their natural resources and they can't export any more stuff, then they have monetary austerity and the country goes bankrupt.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
There you go.
And then have fiscal austerity. Increase tax collection and reduce government spending dramatically.
Right.
Yeah. Privatization, sell off public enterprise to the private sector.
That is to the Jewish sector.
Yeah, that is exactly. This privatization is just Jewish baloney stuff.
Right.
And financial liberalization, remove restrictions on the inflow and out of international capital, as well as restrictions on what foreign businesses and bankers are allowed to buy, own, and operate.
All right, so ultimately it results in total control of the economy.
Yeah, and this will only make it worse. All this stuff will only make it worse.
Right.
This remove restrictions on inflow and outflow. This is also this free trade there to
get
rid of the boundaries.
That's right.
Make it worse for them.
To exploit the poor countries even more and make the profits and charge the importing countries higher rates than they would otherwise. You know, because as we said earlier, if the people in Africa would produce, box, and ship what they have to offer, they would make much more money that way than putting it on the international market, right? And it would be cheaper for us to buy, too. Right. Mm-hmm. Free trade, folks, is simply the catchword of the international Jewish middleman to maximize profits on both ends. Okay. They're the wholesalers, right? So the the onions and sweet potatoes, kohlrabi, what have you, exported from Africa must go into the hands of a Jewish middleman. So he buys it for as cheap a rate as he possibly can. Then he turns around and sells it to the Western market for as much as they possibly can, and they profit twice. That's called wholesaling, as it's run by Jews. All right, back to you. Almost out of time. This is good stuff, folks. This is a really good economics lesson today. Back to you.
Only when government signs this, quote, structural adjustment agreement, and unquote, does the IMF agree to lend enough itself to prevent default on international loans that are about to come due and otherwise would be unpayable.
Right. So in other words, the more debt, they borrow money to pay off the current debt, but they still haven't paid off their debt, right? They incur more debt. This is supposed to solve the economic problems of the country.
No, I don't really. It doesn't sound like this. It worsen it.
That's right.
Arrange a restructuring of the country's debt among private international lenders that includes a pledge of new loans.
There you go. More loans. That's the answer, folks. So why is the world economy trillions and trillions and trillions of dollars in debt? Because of this system. Because of this exact system. And there will have to be another crash, folks. There will have to be another crash. It's going to happen sooner rather than later, but the Rothschilds are going to try to manage the crash so that they lose the least amount during the crash. But the people of every country are going to suffer, and it's going to get really bad because that crash is coming because they want to destabilize white countries the most by this, by staging this crash. So better have your toilet paper and your gold and silver and your prepper goods handy, because you're going to need them real soon. All right, back to you.
Okay. So, and now this comes, this Joseph Stiglitz. It sounds, I don't know if he's Jewish.
Could be, right.
Is one of the most cited economists in the world. The former winner of the Nobel Prize for Economics and a professor at Columbia. Oh, it's music.
Yes. Okay, yeah. So we're going to have to pick this up next time. Joseph Stiglitz, we're going to have to wait. Thanks for listening, everybody. Praise Yahweh, pass the ammunition. See you all next time. Bye-bye. Oh, stay tuned for the David and Duke Show coming up on Speak Free Radio.